local in terms of how they run. The UK has, one of our life business has some operations over here, but the vitality, kind of the vitality R&D, and there's a central network platform we're building that's coming out of here. So it's kind of a mix and match, but the reality is most of the businesses on the ground are resident in their markets. Data is held in those markets given data regulation. So, you know, it truly is a global business. You can't do it all from one site, I think.
And that makes the complexity of it. I mean, multiple geographies, different time zones, all of that stuff suddenly makes you a 24-hour-a-day business.
Absolutely, but you do have to have strong teams in each business that are autonomous, that are to an extent understand strategy, driving it. And I think we have. I think we've got very strong teams. The businesses are well differentiated. They're focused carefully. So while it is 24/7, the truth of it is that they run largely autonomously.
Yeah, I mean, your core health business still growing in South Africa. It is the biggest medical aid in the country. But you've also got massive growth coming out of Discovery Insure, out of the Discovery Invest business, out of the life business, and then, of course, coming on stream at some point, possibly next year, the banking business of Discovery.
You know, I think the shared value model for them incentivizing behavior change and pricing it into the product has worked incredibly well. So we are, I think, razor-sharp competitive in these markets. My sense is that there's, in difficult times like there's been a flight to quality. So Discovery Life and Discovery Health have massive market shares. Discovery Life, I think, gets 1 in 3 policies now in the mass affluent space. Discovery Health, the medical scheme, Discovery Health medical scheme is a 55% market share, but they're growing at strong rates. So my sense is I think they have a strange kind of position as being incumbents but being disruptors at the same time. And I think that positions them really well.
I mean, from a health perspective, how serious is the health department in getting medical aid credits scrapped and to try and raise some revenues for national health insurance, which has been on the table for an awfully long time? And we see renewed levels of noise coming up that there are various plans to find money to create national health insurance.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a narrative that's out there. I think it has some legitimacy. You know, we've seen changes to the tax basis and credits for medical scheme contributions. In our market, it's fairly inelastic, so these things do have an impact. It's fairly inelastic, and we're not overly concerned. Having said that, though, for our members, it is pretty dramatic, especially at the lower income side. It becomes, you know, much more expensive. So these things have unintended consequences. Suddenly, the kind of people that drop out of the system are the healthy. You know, sick people don't drop out. So then you get kind of an adverse selection problem. So my sense is that I think it is a legitimate line of debate around NHI on one hand. On the other, I think it has to be debated thoroughly and all the unintended consequences understood. And I'm pretty sure that will take place.
Are we closer to a sustainable national health system, an expensive system that South Africa may very well struggle to support?
I think there's considerable political will, and I think justifiably so. There is a need to strengthen the public system. There is a need to somehow create an NHI, and we're supportive of it. I think the detail of it, how it interfaces with the private system, I think there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion, and hopefully a pragmatic approach to it.
You uniquely avoided the question of the bank earlier. You know it's coming. It comes every single time we talk. Your Discovery Card business teaches you a lot about the bank that you're about to open. It's a profitable business. It's a well-run business, the Discovery Card business. When will customers be able to transact and be called themselves full-blown bank customers?
Our intention, listen, we are flat out across all the work streams. We're in the process of the regulatory complexity of the licensing. That takes time.
But that's coming to an end now, isn't it? I mean, October, I think, is a deadline, yeah.
It is, and I'm hopeful that we get through that. But if we get through all of it, my sense is that before Q2 2018, the bank will be fully in play where customers can open accounts and transact and do what, you know, the appropriate stuff. So that's where we'll get to. We'll probably be rolling out a program for staff just to test out all the pipes that it works, et cetera, earlier than that. But that's the intention. Now, at the moment, we're on track. I think we're pretty comfortable with 350 people flat out building it. So we'll see how it plays out. But we're feeling good about it.
Okay. Adrian Gore, the chief executive of Discovery, an update from Discovery. 7 billion rand in profits. 10 million people around the world are touched by Discovery. It's an extraordinary South African success story. One of many South African success stories of companies that are developed at home and go global. And amongst them, Discovery, got Steinhoff.